for assured destruction of the Soviet economy inspired calculations that made Fred Eakley's theories about urban bombing seem like a relic of the Stone Age. Rand had developed a computer model to provide speedy estimates of the casualties and deaths that would be caused by different nuclear attacks. It was called Quick Count. The types of weapons to be used in an attack, their targets, the prevailing winds, and the density of the local population were entered into an IBM 7090 computer, and then Quick Count produced graphs, charts, and summaries of the potential carnage. It predicted the consequences of various attacks, not only on the Soviet Union, but also on Eastern Europe, Western Europe, and the United States. And it included, as a bonus, an urban DGZ selector that helped war planners maximize the destruction of cities, allowing them to select the desired ground zeros likely to kill the most people. A government report later outlined the obstacle course to recovery that victims of such nuclear attacks would have to navigate. Time after attack, 1 to 2 days. Attack effect, blast and thermal. 2 to 20 days, lethal fallout. 2 to 7 days, trapped, no medical treatment. 5 to 50 days, life support inadequacies, food, water, shelter. 2 weeks to 1 year, epidemics and diseases. 1 to 2 years, economic breakdown. 5 to 20 years, late radiation effects. 10 to 50 years, ecological effects. 2 to several generations, genetic effects. Although the human toll would be grim, the authors of the report were optimistic about the impact of nuclear detonations on the environment. No weight of nuclear attack which is at all probable could induce gross changes in the balance of nature that approach in type or degree the ones that human civilization has already inflicted on the environment, it said. These include cutting most of the original forests, tilling the prairies, irrigating the deserts, damming and polluting the streams, eliminating certain species and introducing others, overgrazing hillsides, flooding valleys, and even preventing forest fires. The implication was that nature might find nuclear warfare a relief. Kissinger had once thought that Western Europe could be defended with tactical nuclear weapons, confining the damage to military targets and avoiding civilian casualties. But that idea now seemed inconceivable, and the refusal of America's NATO allies to build up their conventional forces ensured that a military conflict with the Soviet Union would quickly escalate beyond control. During a meeting in the White House Situation Room, Kissinger complained that NATO nuclear policy insists on our destruction before the Europeans will agree to defend themselves. Nixon's administration soon found itself in much the same position as Kennedy's, urgently seeking alternatives to an all-out nuclear war with the Soviet Union. I must not be, and my successors must not be, limited to the indiscriminate mass destruction of enemy civilians as the sole possible response, President Nixon told Congress. Phrases like flexible response and graduated escalation and pauses for negotiation seemed relevant once again, as Kissinger asked the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop plans for limited nuclear war. But the Joint Chiefs still balked at making changes to the PSYOP and resisted any civilian involvement in target selection. The debacle in Vietnam had strengthened their belief that once the United States entered a war, the military should determine how to fight it. When Kissinger visited the headquarters of the Strategic Air Command to discuss nuclear war plans, General Bruce K. Holloway, the head of SAC, deliberately hid certain aspects of the PSYOP from him. The details about specific targets were considered too important and too secret for Kissinger to know. The Pentagon's reluctance to allow civilian control of the PSYOP was prompted mainly by operational concerns. A limited attack on the Soviet Union might impede the full execution of the PSYOP and provoke an immediate all-out retaliation by the Soviets. A desire to fight humanely could bring annihilation and defeat. More important, the United States still didn't have the technological or administrative means to wage a limited nuclear war. A 1968 report by the Weapons Systems Evaluation Group said that within 5 to 6 minutes of launching a submarine-based missile, the Soviet Union could, with a high degree of confidence, kill the President of the United States, the Vice President, and the next 14 successors to the Oval Office. The worldwide military command and control system had grown to encompass 8 warning systems, 60 communications networks, 100 command centers, and 70,000 personnel. But the ground stations for its early warning satellites could easily be destroyed by conventional weapons or sabotage, eliminating the ability to detect Soviet missile launches. The National Emergency Airborne Command Post, a converted Boeing 747 designed to take off, whisk the president away from Washington safely, and permit the management of nuclear warfare in real time, did not have a computer. The officers manning the plane would have to record information about a Soviet attack by hand, and the entire command and control system could be shut down by the electromagnetic pulse and the transient radiation effects of a nuclear detonation above the United States. Communications might be impossible for days after a Soviet attack. The system had already proven unreliable in conditions far less demanding than a nuclear war. In 1967, during the Six-Day War, urgent messages warning the USS Liberty to remain at least 100 miles off the coast of Israel were mistakenly routed to American bases in the Philippines, Morocco, and Maryland. The spy ship was attacked by Israeli planes almost 2 days after the first urgent warning was sent, and never received. The following year, when the USS Pueblo was attacked by North Korean forces, its emergency message calling for help took more than 2 hours to pass through the WWMCCS bureaucracy and reach the Pentagon. The American naval commander in Japan who managed to contact the Pueblo couldn't establish direct communications with the Pentagon, the Situation Room at the White House, or commanders in the Pacific whose aircraft might have defended the ship. During a conflict with the Soviet Union, messages would have to be accurately relayed within moments of an attack. A decade after the Kennedy administration recognized the problem, despite the many billions of dollars that had been spent to fix it, the command and control system of the United States was still incapable of managing a nuclear war. A more accurate appraisal, a top-secret WSEG study concluded,